Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Tuesday, September 19th. Folks, we are one day closer to Friday. For some of you, that's an important thing. One day closer. And I will say, we are one day closer to the official start of hockey, the National Hockey League. We're in preseason.
Well, I'm not familiar with this concept of hockey.
Ray, you can't speak. I haven't introduced you yet.
I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to introduce you.
I got all excited about hockey.
I know. Here's my co-host, the amazing, the awe-inspiring Ray Pritchard, Keep Believing Ministries. Ray, you don't know how long I take searching for adjectives for you.
That was good. That touched my heart. That warmed the cockles of my soul, whatever that means.
Oh, well, Ray, welcome once again to Tuesdays and Thursdays, usually your day to be here on the program, unless you're out doing your little Bible thing.
You're teaching
the Bible somewhere, right. You know. So anyway, welcome, Ray. And you should know about hockey. You live in the Dallas area.
And we got a team.
We got a team.
The Dallas Stars, yeah.
Hey, this is pretty good because now another hockey fan.
That's right.
Fred Jackson. That's three of us.
But you know where this is leading is that is, Walker, do you watch hockey? No, I don't watch hockey.
You knew where this was leading, didn't you?
Hey, listen, you had your football talk yesterday.
That's right. Mississippi State.
I loved it.
Hey, listen, speaking of hockey, we as a family are going to our first NHL game. Coming up the end of this month in Nashville.
In Nashville, the Blackhawks in town or something?
Blackhawks, I couldn't afford those tickets.
Oh, okay.
It's Tampa. Tampa's in town, and so we're all going. My wife is going, our two daughters, and the husband of one of our daughters. It's going to be the first NHL game for most of us. I used to go when I lived in Toronto many years ago. But
normal people could afford tickets.
Well, through the scalpers.
Yeah. Hey, that's exciting. I've actually looked. I didn't realize single game tickets were on sale because I thought it'd be great. I'd love for my son, maybe my daughter, my wife would just refuse to go. She'd just be bored to tears, I guess. But to go see the Bruins when the Bruins come into Nashville.
Now I must add, we're in the nosebleed section. At one end, I mean, that's where the cheaper tickets are.
Yeah.
So if anybody has any box seats out there.
That's right. And I would like to echo those sentiments. If you live in Nashville and you have tickets to the Bruins and the Nashville Predators, listen, I could almost guarantee you a spot in heaven.
That's
if you give me those tickets.
That's right.
Almost. Yeah,
that's
almost.
Almost. We could almost guarantee it. That's
almost
right.
Almost guarantee it. All right. Listen, we've got we've got Frank Turk coming on in a few minutes. Fred Jackson, we have got to talk about this speech that the president just made in the United Nations. And I didn't have a chance to listen to it. I thought it was going to start at 9:30. I said, there's no way I'll be able to get this in and get prepared for the show. But now it started at 9. You guys in the newsroom listened to it.
It started at 9:05, and here's the sophisticated response. Wow. I have never heard a United States president, Republican or Democrat, speak so frankly about the situation of the world, where the United States is in all of this, naming leaders, North Korea, Iran.
Let me just jump in here real quick, because here's a tweet from John Roberts of Fox News. He says, well, Donald Trump's speech at United Nations left no room for interpretation. That was as direct as anything I have ever heard.
Yeah.
That's from John Roberts.
So we've got three pieces of audio to share with our audience, so you have a little flavor of this speech. You're going to want to go back. It's about 40 minutes long. You're going to want to go back sometime today and listen to the whole thing, folks. But we're going to give you a little taste. First off, he talked about his policy on America. I will always put America first. He talked about the importance of the sovereignty of nations.
As President of the United States, I will always put America first. Just like you, as the leaders of your countries, will always and should always put your countries first. All responsible leaders have an obligation to serve their own citizens, and the nation state remains the best vehicle for elevating the human condition.
Yeah, and he expanded on that at various points during the speech, and got down a little bit further about the middle class and how people should be taken care of. He also went on the attack later in the speech about socialist government and how it never works and it oppresses the people. He went on and on. And the point he was trying to make in that is that, you know, the United Nations ought not to exist to come in and rescue nations. Nations that are taking care of their own people, the sovereignty of their own nation, are going to be able to lift their people up when they put their own people first. So America First, that's a slogan that we're well familiar with in this country. All right. One of the other things he did, and boy, did he unload, when he began to talk about the rogue nation of North Korea.
The United States has great strength and patience, but if it is forced to defend itself or its allies, we will have no choice but to totally destroy North Korea. Rocket Man is on a suicide mission for himself and for his regime. The United States is ready, willing, and able, but hopefully this will not be necessary. That's what the United Nations is all about.
I couldn't believe even Donald Trump said we're ready to totally destroy North Korea. Imagine a leader of a nation saying we're ready to go out and do this to North Korea.
And Ray, nobody doubts that the United States can do this. And I'm guessing this is just a warning. I don't know whether it's just a warning to Kim Jong-un, who I don't know if this man is oblivious.
Better known as Rocket Man.
Better known right. as Rocket Man. Right, and right. now, like Walker said earlier, can't get that song out of my head.
Right, the old right.
Elton John song.
Little Elton John here. Little,
yeah, right. so you know, I don't know whether Kim Jong-un is oblivious, but maybe those around him are not oblivious, and they're hearing this message clearly. What do you think?
You know, there is such a thing as laying down a marker, right? Drawing a line in the sand, making it perfectly clear. And all credit to the president, because for years, we have seen leaders come to the UN and equivocate and palaver and stall and make nice sounding words. And you listen to them and you couldn't. In fact, most of the speeches made at the United Nations are not worth hearing, I would say. But today was truly a great moment for the president and a great moment for our country. And we got to say, can you imagine? I don't think I've ever heard one nation stand up and say, if you mess with us, if you cross the line, we are going to totally wipe you out. And the thing is, the U.S. has the power to do it. So will he listen? Will he launch another missile in the next 24 hours just to give his answer?
All right, Fred. Good.
And he wasn't finished when he took those frank words about North Korea. He then turned his attention, President Trump, in the speech to the UN this morning, he then turned his attention to Iran.
It is far past time for the nations of the world to confront another reckless regime, one that speaks openly of mass murder, vowing death to America, destruction to Israel, and ruin for many leaders and nations in this room. The Iranian government masks a corrupt dictatorship behind the false guise of a democracy. We cannot let a murderous regime continue these destabilizing activities while building dangerous missiles, and we cannot abide by an agreement if it provides cover for the eventual construction of a nuclear program.
He went on to say, this Iranian agreement, he says, the worst that was ever negotiated.
Well, and this is going to make a lot. I'll tell you who's going to be pleased with this last segment we just talked about. And we're going to switch over here in just a second, bring Frank Turek in and get his initial reactions. But I'll tell you who's going to make happy, and that is some of the other nations in the Middle East.
Yes.
The other Muslim nations in the Middle East, Saudi Arabia and Jordan, some of these others mm-hmm. who've been very, very, I would even say, frightened at mm-hmm. the increased aggression coming from Iran. They are obviously already trying to destabilize the Middle East through their terrorist proxies. And so I think it's going to make a lot of these other nations happy that we're taking such a strong stand against Iran.
There really is a realigning of nations in the Middle East right now. Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, in his last speech to the United Nations, alluded to that, in that he said once, that it was thought that would never happen, but he mentioned how Arab nations are coming to work with Israel against a common enemy, that, of course, being Iran. And now, the president says this very openly. So, again, President Trump putting North Korea, putting Iran on notice, that's it. Mm-hmm. We're fed up with you guys, and in particular North Korea, that statement, we're ready to totally destroy you.
Well, we want to welcome to the program Frank Turek, who's an author, apologetics expert. I always now have to say it because Frank is always waiting for me to say it. He's a dynamic speaker. He is host of the radio program Cross-Examined, heard on AFR Talk each Saturday from 9 to 10 a.m. Central Time and every Sunday from 4 to 5 p.m. Central Time. Frank, welcome to the program.
Dynamic.
And we expect you to be dynamic. On this program too, Frank. So
putting all the pressure on me now.
Yeah. So what do you think about that? I know you may not have been able to listen to the speech, but I don't know how much of Fred's comments and some of the audio we played. Do you have any initial reaction?
Is Fred dynamic? Can I trust him?
You'll be speaking down to all of us. None of us reach dynamic status except probably Ray. But go ahead. Do your best.
I happened to see the speech, at least most of it, and it was extremely direct, and it's refreshing to have somebody just speak the truth rather than apologize for something our country never did.
Yes.
Which is what we've had in previous years, as you know.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully this kind of rhetoric will stop North Korea from doing anything crazy with their military. And hopefully it will wake up Iran that there's a new sheriff in town, and Iran won't be so belligerent either. I mean, the purpose of having a strong military and strong rhetoric is to ensure that we have peace. Hmm. And nobody ever prevented a war by being weak.
That's absolutely true. And this is what history teaches us. And what's obviously true just empirically is that the current situations have not improved by anyone playing nice with North
That's
Korea
right.
or Iran. Let me get one other additional comment from you, Frank, before Ryan. I know Ray wants to bring up another issue that we have you on the program to discuss. But the idea, the first clip we played was President Trump talking about nationalism and the importance of nations taking care of their own people. I think he later went on to say, and does say when he talks about nationalism, he says we need to also have respect for other sovereign nations. Mm-hmm. But he, so the only one who's not going to like, the only category of people who aren't going to like that kind of statement are those who are globalists. So what is the problem that globalists have with people talking about nationalism?
Well, I think they believe that we're all just going to come together under one world government and live happily ever after, when in fact that's just not a realistic view of human nature. It's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible talks about nations having secure borders and borders that needed to be respected. So the idea that we're just going to have this one world government here on earth, other than the government of Christ when he comes back,
right,
a human government, it's unrealistic. So why these people think that's going to be something that's going to be attained is just beyond me. But I'd also say these are the same people, by the way, who claim that multiculturalism is good, right? They're claiming multiculturalism is good, but they seem to also want to say that we're just going to have this one big culture where everyone's going to get along. So it's kind of contradictory when you think about it.
Yeah.
And they say you ought not judge other cultures, but they're judging our culture now and saying our culture's wrong.
Right.
So they want to have it all different ways. And I think the biggest difference between a conservative viewpoint of the world and a liberal viewpoint of the world is that conservatives want to adjust their behavior to fit reality, whereas liberals want to adjust reality to fit their behavior.
Ooh. And now that was dynamic.
Dynamic.
That was
yeah, that's
dynamic.
Right.
That was
also,
really good.
it's two different views of human nature. Conservatives want to conserve the idea that human beings are inherently bent toward evil and we need to conserve moral absolutes and the truth about the world, whereas liberals think human beings are inherently good, and if you just get rid of all their weapons, everyone's going to live peacefully in utopia. And we know that's not the truth. In fact, Trump had a line in the speech that I just caught halfway because I was trying to do something else while watching. He talked about, I think something about Venezuela, where he said something like, and I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it directly, but he said something like, socialism didn't work in Venezuela, not because it wasn't tried properly. It's because socialism doesn't work. And some people clapped. He waited for the applause line. And other people didn't want to clap because they think socialism just hasn't worked right because it hasn't been tried properly. That's like saying Nazism hasn't worked right because it hasn't been tried properly.
Right.
No, socialism doesn't work because it has a wrong view of human nature.
Well, and Ray, it doesn't work because it doesn't work. Hey, listen, Ray, you had something else. We don't have Frank for very much longer.
Yeah, Frank, I wanted to ask you about our good friend Nabil Qureshi. I saw the wonderful column that you wrote, and some of our listeners know him. We've interviewed him a couple of times here on Today's Issues. Went to be with the Lord at the age of 34 on Saturday after about a year after being diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer. A great, great man. From a human point of view, gone too soon. I know that you knew him. Say something about the life and legacy of Nabil Qureshi.
Well, as I said in the article, which is called Why Didn't God Heal Nabil Qureshi, I said that Nabil did more for the kingdom of God in 34 years than 10,000 people do in 80. Hmm. And wow. He created, first of all, as you know, for some of you may not know, Nabil was originally a sort of a Muslim missionary. His family were missionaries from Pakistan originally to Indonesia. His father actually served in the United States Navy, and they were a strong Muslim family. But Nabil actually came to believe that Christ was the Savior and Christianity was true because he was challenged by a man by the name of David Wood, who challenged Nabil while they were going to school together up in Virginia. And after about a 7-year process, Nabil became a Christian. He actually had three visions of Jesus or dreams that helped make him believe that Christianity was indeed true. And of course, he checked out the evidence and he wrote three books. I know that Seeking Allah, Finding Jesus is an international bestseller. He also wrote No God But One. And then he wrote a book regarding jihad. And those three books are tremendous resources. He also put together hundreds of hours of videos and lectures that are going to be used to bring people to Christ for many more years. And one of the points I make in the article about, you know, why would God allow Nabil to die is first of all, we don't know specifically, but we do know that since God's character is goodness, that ultimately he will redeem Nabil's life just like he redeemed Nabil, that good will come from this. There's something out there known as the ripple effect, which says that an event occurring today ripples forward into the future to affect trillions of other events. We can't always trace how those events occur. We can't trace all the dominoes that fall as a result of what is a tragedy today. But God can, because he's outside of time and he can see how all of these ripples ripple forward into the future. Perhaps, as I write in the article, more people will come to know Christ because of Nabil's death. It's impossible for us to know the extent of that right now, but it's not impossible for God because he's outside of time. He can bring good from evil. In fact, the ripple effect led a pastor at Notre Dame in Paris over 150 years ago to say this. He said, if God would concede me his power for 24 hours, you would see how many changes I would make in the world. But if he gave me his wisdom too, I would leave things as they are. Meaning that God can bring good from evil, even when we can't see what that good is. And in the article, and I hope people read the article, because at the end of the article, the column, it says, it provides an opportunity for you to support Nabil's wife, Michelle, and his daughter, Aya, who's only 1 year, old, or a little over a year old, maybe two by now. So financially, they're going to need help. And there's a link in the article where you can help fund Michelle and Aya moving forward. So Nabil didn't create ripples. Actually, he created waves that are going to carry people into heaven for generations. So I grieve with his family that he's gone, but he has had such an amazing impact and legacy, and he died about the same age that Jesus died.
You know, a lot of people may not be familiar with Nabil Qureshi, but just to give you an idea of the caliber of Christian he was, he worked with Ravi Zacharias and would go out on the road with him. Ravi Zacharias, one of the leading apologists in the world,
right,
and thought very dearly of him, and a very moving testimony in the wake of Nabil's death. We were studying Islam in our Sunday school class several months ago, and I used, and I think it was about 27 minutes long, a YouTube of Nabil Qureshi talking about his testimony, how he came to the Lord, and he went out seeking, like Lee Strobel.
Yeah.
To, you know, he was very aggressive. He was a Muslim, basically starting out to try to discount Christianity with his friend, as Frank was talking about. But then he comes around to it. It is tremendous. It's a good 27 minutes or so to take to your Sunday school class. If you want to know about Islam and you want to know how to bring a Muslim to Christ, it is tremendous. And as Frank has alluded to, there are many videos of Nabil, 34 years old, just an incredible, a brilliant guy, a medical doctor.
Right.
Who basically was out there, and I'm not sure how much he practiced medicine, because I think he was very busy in his calling from the Lord in his short life to be an apologist for the Christian faith. And so it's sad in human terms that he goes away at such an early age. And I was tracking with him as he would put out things as he grew more ill over the last several months. But you know, he was ready to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just loved the Lord that much, and nothing changed that. But tremendous testimony. And as I say, I would encourage people, if you want to get to know him better and his ministry and where he came from, look up some of these YouTube videos, and it'll be a tremendous education.
And Walker, we're going to post Frank's article?
Yes, Frank's article is posted at crossexamine.org, which is Frank's website. It's also posted at afa.net. We republished Frank's article on afa.net. So both those places, and I posted it also on the Today's Issues Facebook page.
Well, Frank, we are just about out of time, like 30 seconds left. We want to thank you for being our guest, but I'll give you 20 seconds just to this indicates, I think, how well we won't have time for any dynamic comments. Let me just say this, Frank. It indicates to me how much God loves the Muslim people. He doesn't love the lies that they're trapped in, but he loves those people. And that's the attitude Christians need to have when we come across people who are Muslim, is that these are souls that Jesus died for. So
that's right. And pray for Nabil's wife and his daughter and his loving parents as well. His mother, his parents are still Muslim, but obviously Michelle is a Christian. But pray for them all.
Well, when you visit folks, Frank Turek's article, there is a link if you feel led to help his family after he dies. Thanks, Frank. We'll be back in 2 minutes, folks.
On the next Today's Issues, our guest will be Abraham Hamilton III.
It's very tempting to respond to the issues of the day in the flesh. And lots of people are tempted to jettison the scriptures in order to coddle their own form of offense or victimization, whatever you want to call it.
We'll also hear from Dr. Richard Land of Southern Evangelical Seminary and news from Chris Woodward and Steve Jordahl.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Peace. Be still. Why are you so afraid?
Our nation is in the throes of an especially treacherous hurricane season. The magnitude of devastation is heartbreaking. But with heartbreak comes hope. Faithful believers are going in after the storms to help survivors.
We have seen the hand of God, which no man can control.
Disasters bring an opportunity for you and I to show Jesus.
Whether hurricanes, disease, financial ruin, or even loss of life, God is faithful through the storm. Even the wind and the waves obey Him. As He is faithful, may we continue to be faithful to share God's love. A reminder from the American Family Association.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Peter Coe, and I'm a business major, and this is my junior year at the college. What I love about the athletics here at Truett McConnell University is the coaches and their side of trying to teach sports from a biblical mindset with sportsmanship involved, and it really changes the way that you pursue the game, not just passionately doing it for other people, but also for yourself and to glorify God in that, which is completely different from most other schools.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Hobby Lobby, the national arts and crafts chain, is embroiled in a raging controversy over whether cotton is racist. As absurd as it may sound, a Texas customer wrote a Facebook post blasting Hobby Lobby for selling raw cotton plants. More than 200,000 people weighed in. Many agreed with her argument that cotton was a commodity gained at the expense of African American slaves. Well, the same could be said about peanuts and tobacco, but I don't want to give the perpetually offended crowd any ideas. Hobby Lobby is not commenting. Meanwhile, African American students at Lipscomb University in Tennessee became enraged after they were invited to a dinner party at the university president's house, only to discover the tables were decorated with cotton balls. No word if they were purchased at Hobby Lobby. I'm not quite sure where this war on cotton is headed, but don't be surprised if leisure suits come back in style. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman this week while he is in Washington, D.C. on his spiritual heritage tour. It is September 19th, and nothing much is happening in the world, folks. So we're going to try to kill some time today. I don't know what we might talk about. No, co-host Ray Pritchard of Keep Believing Ministries, Fred Jackson in studio as well, news director for American Family News and One News Now, Walker Wildman, assistant to the president. We also now want to welcome our regular for Tuesdays on Today's Issues, Sandy Rios, who's AFA Director of Governmental Affairs. She's also host of Sandy Rios in the Morning, heard on AFR Talk each weekday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. Central Time. Sandy, welcome back.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Well, we appreciate that kind word. We're not called gentlemen very often, but thank you for that. Well, Sandy,
once a week.
Yeah, once a week. That's right. It's a thrill for us. Well, I am assuming you I listened to your program this morning on the way into work, and so there's lots we can talk to you about, but I'm assuming you heard at least part of the president's speech, wanted to get your initial reaction to it.
You know what, Ed? The truth is, I can't comment on that, honestly. I wish I could. I've been sitting here working since I got off the air.
Okay.
I can tell you about a lot of other things, but I didn't listen to it yet.
Okay. All right. Well, then what we're going to do is we will...
I'm sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Listen, I didn't get a chance to listen to the speech. I was also working. Fred listened to it. I don't know what he does over there all day long, listening to television speeches. So let us switch gears. And Fred, you have a little bit of audio from something that happened, because I know, Sandy, you talked on your program this morning about DACA. Fred, what kind of audio do you have for our listeners involving Nancy Pelosi, our friend and dear colleague.
Yeah, well, over the weekend, she was home in San Francisco. And in San Francisco, for the most part, Nancy Pelosi is among friends.
Right.
And so she had a gathering, and she was talking about this deal being worked out for the so-called Dreamers, DACA. We've heard a lot about that in the last couple of weeks. Well, Nancy Pelosi, I don't think, was ready for the reaction from some of the young people that were in the audience. And so what we're going to hear right now is Nancy Pelosi being challenged because she supposedly made this deal with President Trump when she and Chuck Schumer had dinner with President Trump last week to talk about DACA.
Do you want to hear an answer or do you just want to chat? Just stop it now. Let's stop it now. Stop it. You are not helping the cause. Since you don't want to listen, we'll have to just go. You don't want to listen. Please listen first.
Now, President Donald Trump is used to that kind of crowd. But I think it really took Nancy Pelosi by surprise.
Well, Sandy, Nancy Pelosi got Berkeleyed. I mean, we'll just make that a verb from now on. This is what happens when you speak and the left doesn't like what you have to say.
Yeah, you know, the first time I can remember, I actually felt sympathetic to her. And because you know what? She, for all the facts that I disagree with her on everything, she is an American. They are not. They have no right to go into a press conference by the minority leader of the House and threaten her the way they did. Did you see how close they were to her?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
They were right up front, and they call her a liar. She says, we're trying to help you. You know, she's all about, you know, giving them all the legal benefits. And still they scream, and they call her a liar, and they demand that every single illegal immigrant in this country be made legal. That's what they're demanding. So when people talk about, the dreamers that just saw these poor kids, you know, these are the poor kids, entitled, demanding, leftist, socialist, no borders, privileged beyond measure, given the rights of American citizenship, given jobs, given college education. How many of you have written a check for your kids to go to college? Just wondering. My hand is up.
Yeah.
But the dreamers, not so much, you see, because we want to give them a hand up. And meanwhile, they're draining our resources. They're draining our education fund. They're draining our hospitals. And they have no appreciation. None. You heard them screaming at her. It's just amazing to me that now we are going to lobby to, let's just make them all legal and give them jobs and let them bring in their families and give them Social Security cards and let them have free education and let them have free, and on it goes. Because trust me, we know now that many of them have signed up for Obamacare and have been receiving, you know, health care at the detriment of our health care system. So,
Sandy, I wanted to ask you about a story that was floating out there in the last 24 hours about Paul Manafort, who was the campaign chairman there for a while for Donald Trump and was later replaced. Now it's come out evidently he was wiretapped. In your judgment, does this vindicate President Trump's claim that you know, back in March, I guess he said the Trump Tower had been wiretapped and he was widely ridiculed by the press. Does this now vindicate what the president was saying?
I absolutely believe it does. Paul Manafort lived in Trump Tower. He was in Trump Tower, and he was wiretapped not only when he was wiretapped twice. It was while he was working with the Trump campaign, and then they started they ordered wiretapping later. And you know what? The thing about it is, Ed, it looks as though, from what I'm reading, that they actually ordered, I believe, the second wiretap based on that phony dossier that we believe that the FBI at least offered if they did not pay for this salacious dossier that was aimed at Trump, that had all of this false, ridiculous, salacious information that proved not to be true. And in the course of that, went after Paul Manafort and also the other guy that was loosely connected to the campaign, whose name escapes me in the moment, who is, by the way, suing. He's turning around. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to sue the FBI for using that information. And I'm hearing that the FISA court, which is that very secret court in Washington, D.C., that became known after 9/11, mm-hmm. that's where FBI agents would go in and ask for special warrants to investigate people that they thought were terrorists. So nobody knows who the judges are. Nobody knows where the court is. At least the general public doesn't know. It's a very secret court. I'm hearing that judges in that court are very, very upset at the FBI for using them to supply warrants to surveil people who there was absolutely no reason. The dossier was completely false. So we're going to hear more about this.
Sandy, this is Walker here. This is very ironic because President Trump, as you mentioned, came out, and Ray mentioned this also, and he was blasted as if he was believing in Santa Claus or someone that no American citizen would be wiretapped. How dare you accuse the intelligence community of such? CNN, the same folks who blasted him, are the ones who discovered this. They discovered that Paul Manafort was wiretapped. And so it's coming out that when President Trump says things that at the time seem very unrealistic and outlandish, he has the evidence that he was wiretapped, and he obviously had this evidence months ago. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, he wouldn't have said it.
Well, and the other thing, you know, Susan Rice just testified before the Congress the end of last week, I believe. And she is the one who she's one of the people that was key in unmasking mm-hmm. several Americans who happened to be working for the Trump campaign. So I believe that just about everything that Donald Trump accused the Barack Obama administration of doing actually happened. And I think there's so much more that we don't even know. And yet, who's going to report it? And who cares? You know, I mean, it's like the control of the information is really frightening to me. The thing, I was just in discussions with friends this morning because there's a lot of discouragement about what's happening in the White House right now. But this is the thing. You know, there's a reason why totalitarian governments and leftists always, you know, cannot stop until they have killed the last dissident, silenced, emasculated the last dissident, because they recognize that one person speaking the truth, just one, is a tremendous threat to them. And I take heart that there are tons of us still speaking the truth. And I just believe that truth is powerful, and we have to embrace it, shout it from the housetops, and I'm going to keep doing that. I know you guys are too.
Sandy, I know we just got a couple minutes left with you. We'd like to bring this up, and maybe next week we can explore this in a little more detail even, but you sent to us a story that is posted on the website of the Southern Poverty Law Center and involving their, I guess, explanation for their hate group map, which has come under a lot of scrutiny and a lot of criticism. And do you have just a few minutes just to tell our listeners about what this document, that what they're attempting to do, basically, and in lumping all groups that they disagree with in together? Do you have a few minutes just to let our listeners know about what that document is?
Well, the SPLC is now producing this religious hate groups, and of course that will include evangelicals. And you know, Ray, they actually have been doing this for a long time. They have a deep-seated hatred for anyone who holds the Judeo-Christian view of the world, and you can tell that by, it's almost like, you know, when you try to evaluate someone and you say, well, look at who their friends are, and also look at who their enemies are. You can tell a lot about a person if you line those groups up. And with the SPLC, it's the same thing. The people that end up on their hate groups just happen to be the people who believe marriage should be between one man and one woman, who believe that homosexuality, as of God's law, is out of the bounds of moral sexual acting, you know, that it should only be done between one man and one woman for a lifetime. So anyone who believes that is an enemy and on their hate list. Anyone who believes that Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords and he's the only way is, it just so happens, are on their hate list because they are apologists for Islam. They are apologists for homosexuality, for gay marriage. So you can see who their friends and enemies are. So people who hold the worldview that we do, who believe that there's only one God, he sent his son, and all the things that then emanate from believing that, we are their enemies and we are on their hate list. So it's no surprise to me that now they should spell that out, that it's going to be Christians who are haters, and they're going to define us as such and try to destroy us in the process. It's just, you know, it's funny, isn't it interesting that evil is becoming more bold, mm-hmm. more blatant? Mm. I was just reading last week, maybe you guys heard about Sally Quinn, married to Ben Bradley, who was the Washington Post editor. And Sally Quinn and Ben Bradley were the center of social circles in D.C. for decades, starting with really the Watergate era. And they still are. He's dead, but she still is. Sally Quinn is like the kingmaker. And now we know, because of a memoir that she wrote, that she's an occultist. She has been for decades. She has put hexes on people. She believes that she's caused three people to die. We're hearing about spirit dinners attended by the Podesta brothers, where they serve in the spirit dinners fresh sperm, fresh breast milk, and fresh urine. Evil, wicked practices. We are reading this in print. They are admitting that they are involved, the leadership in D.C. I'm not saying everyone because I don't know, but many of the leadership of the left in D.C. are deeply involved in the occult. So we would never have heard about that. We would have thought that was sort of bizarre. How crazy.
National Enquirer kind of stuff.
Right. Exactly. And now they're actually confessing, writing about it. They're proud about it. And we are seeing the underbelly of wickedness, which I will repeat what I've something we all know, that we do wrestle not against flesh and blood, but we wrestle against principalities and powers that of unseen darkness that we can't see. Wickedness is getting more bold, and we're seeing that with the SPLC too. So, and by the way, I'm going to be doing an entire show on the SPLC this Friday, so people will want to tune in and listen.
Okay, yes, absolutely, folks, tune in and listen, because the SPLC is, in a sense, a manifestation, a symptom of the kind of bold evil that Sandy is talking about. And folks, what that means is Christians have to be bold, while at the same time understanding we are not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against spiritual powers and wicked and dark forces in the heavenlies. So according to Acts chapter 4, listeners, if you're Christian, be praying for boldness to speak the truth, remain salt and light. Sandy, we're going to let you go. We know you've got other things going on. Sandy Rios, our AFA Director of Governmental Affairs, also host of Sandy Rios in the Morning, heard on AFR Talk each weekday morning from 7 to 8 a.m. Central Time. Listen every day this week, but especially on Friday when Sandy has a special program about the Southern Poverty Law Center. Sandy, thank you so much for being on again with us here on Today's Issues.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Ed. Talk to you guys soon.
All right.
Boy, I'm thankful for that the American Family Radio Network has people like Sandy.
Yes.
Janet Medford, I like to listen to her on my lunch hour each day, 12 noon here on American Family Radio. We've got, I believe, some of the best talk show hosts in the country.
Right.
They bring these kinds of stories. You just heard Sandy talking about the deep, dark underbelly.
Right.
That's going spiritually going on in this country. And you're.
I didn't know that about Sally Quinn.
No.
The occultic practices, putting hexes on people. She's married to Ben Bradley. I mean, this is from 60 Minutes, right? Ben Bradley. Mm-hmm. And so this is. This is the kind of, we're talking about demonic activity in the upper crust of America's political and media class.
You're talking about somebody who says that she cast spells or hexes and three people died as a result. And I know in the modern world, we sort of poo-poo or downplay that kind of thing or think that's just superstition, but read the Old Testament, people.
Right.
Read the warnings from God in the Old Testament. The spirit world is a real world. There's a dark side. It's very dangerous. this is real stuff we're talking about.
Yeah, I just want to return to that document that Sandy was talking about the Southern Poverty Law Center, just because it's going to be out there and people need to be aware. One of the tactics of the Southern Poverty Law Center is to try to link all of conservative Christianity with some really strange groups.
Right.
They try to put them all together, like Dave Koresh, Waco, that kind of thing. So they'll try to put you all in the same swimming pool.
Right.
Don't let them do that. But that's part of their tactics. But listen to this. In this document that Sandy sent out this morning, during the 1980s and 1990s, reading here from this document, right-wing extremists were galvanized by several national issues, such as the perceived erosion of parental rights and authority through court rulings, expanding multiculturalism, abortion rights, and the decline of the American family farm, all believed to be an attack on the Judeo-Christian beliefs. Listen, see what they said there? Perceived erosion of parental rights. It's not perceived at all. If you're listening to news at all, what's going on in our public school system today?
Right.
Rockland, California, little five-year-olds being taught by their teacher there's nothing wrong with transgenderism, and a little boy in the class transitioning, the teacher says, to a little girl and has dressed up as a little girl.
All done without parental knowledge.
All done without parental knowledge. And the school board says we don't have to tell the parents. So that's just the latest example. Yet the Southern Poverty Law Center says it's perceived.
Well, and now I started working my way through. They have their first three in a series here. And it's basically all about the how religion drives hatred.
Yes.
Okay. Now, this is a secular, atheistic, humanistic group, radical leftists, and here's the trick that they use. And this is why the success of their hate group map has been felt even to the upper reaches of the, at the time, the Obama administration. They do things like this. They will say, here is a right-wing white supremacist group, and they highlight it. They name names, and this is this group, and they quote scripture.
Yeah.
And then the American Family Association also quotes scripture, so the American Family Association is a hate group like this white supremacist group.
Right.
I mean, this is the kind of, you know, paint-by-numbers, guilty-by-association approach that the Southern Poverty Law Center... Listen, we could do the same thing with them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we could cite someone they're citing and say, well, Vladimir Lenin also cited this person, so therefore the Southern Poverty Law Center is a communist group. Well, no one's going to accept that argument, but the media does accept what the Southern Poverty Law Center is doing in making guilt by association. Walker and Ray, jump in here. This is the kind of thing that American Family Association, American Family Radio is here to do, and that is expose the strategies and tactics, not only spiritually speaking, of our enemy, but also flesh and blood enemies.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and it's clearly guilt by association. They take some of these radical, strange, I mean, and very bizarre, and some of them evil groups scattered around across the country. Then they take AFA and they, as you said, throw us in there hoping that people will not investigate. And unfortunately, too many people don't take the time to investigate. But the truth of the matter is, we're on that list only for standing up for biblical values, standing up for marriage, standing up for life, defending the unborn and defending traditional marriage. Now, if that makes you a hate group, well, then your definition is really flawed, because all we're doing is standing up for what Christians everywhere have always believed.
Yeah, and the end game here, what folks don't understand, your average person doesn't understand, is the end game is not just to smear us publicly. They've already done that. They've been doing that. The end game is to shut us down. They want to close our doors. And if you would have said that years ago during the midst of the homosexual marriage battle, people did say, oh, y'all are crazy. Y'all just have different viewpoints, and y'all just need to agree to disagree. They don't want to do that. The left, they think we're invalid, and we need to be completely shut down. We need to be out of business. We need to be non-existent anymore. We as in these Christian organizations. And that's their end game. Their end game is not just public criticism. Their end game is to shut us down and send us home.
Well, and Fred, we don't even have to, folks who are listening don't even have to take our word for it. The founder of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Morris Dees, said in the 1970s, and he's repeated it. He said, listen, we're not just monitoring these groups. We want to destroy them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, so we're not making this up. We're not putting words in his mouth. We are simply taking Morris Dees at his word.
Right. Yeah.
And there's big money behind them, as we have noted before. Here's the other thing, folks, that you should notice. The language the Southern Poverty Law Center is using to describe people who are conservative, they're using things like white supremacists, white nationalists. Notice the crossing over between the language the Southern Poverty Law Center is using and the mainstream media is using for some of these protests, the whole monument thing that's going on right now. Folks, it's all linked. And it's now they may not meet in a room somewhere and decide on strategy, but I believe there is a great strategist behind all of this. And it's bringing these forces together, and it goes right back to what Sandy was talking about a few moments ago. We are living in a time of major spiritual warfare that most of us have never experienced in this country before. Christianity, biblical Christianity, is under attack. Why is it under attack? Because they see it as that last bastion between them taking full power, and they have to get rid of us. That's the bottom line.
And Fred, you're exactly right. That's the end game here. It's what Walker said. It's elimination.
Right.
They want to intimidate us so that we will shut down, so that we'll stop talking, so that we won't make... They do not want to hear a dissenting voice on issues of life or marriage or culture or morality. But, folks, we've got news for the Southern Poverty Law Center and all of their accomplices. We aren't going anywhere. Hmm. We're going to continue to speak out for the truth here at American Family Radio.
Well, Ray, we just got a couple minutes here before we have to take another break. It has always struck me, and I obviously this is for some people I'm going to be saying this is a big duh moment, I'm sure, but it's always struck me that God has chosen the spoken word and the written word. He has, in other words, chosen words to communicate his truth, the communication of the gospel. Now you can have other, you can have memes and movies, and those are all powerful, but it is the power of the spoken and written word that God has chosen to communicate eternal truth to mankind. It is also very often the instrument that our spiritual enemy, the devil, chooses to try to confuse people with. None of this is any surprise to a preacher, is it?
Well, the thing to remember is what Fred said earlier, and what you're alluding to. We are in a spiritual battle. I mean, it's got political ramifications and cultural ramifications and who's in the White House and Wall Street and Hollywood and all the rest. But at the end of the day, this is a battle between good and evil, a battle between what God has said and the people who have rejected God and have suppressed the knowledge of the truth of God. Basically, I think what we're seeing, Ed, come true is Romans 1 right before our very eyes. And folks, I would certainly say we better be praying. We better speak out, and also need to buckle up because hard times are upon us.
Yeah, yeah, and we're coming up here on a break, and this, as you said, Fred, this is something that is fairly new for American Christians, and let's face it, Western civilization, except for individual countries, maybe like Poland and some others, where Christianity is still strong, in Western civilization, it is weakened because of reasons X, Y, or Z. America, in a sense, is the last bastion in the West of a country with a strong Christian population. We had better be the church in coming years because we are going to be fighting for our spiritual lives. Mm. Folks, you think we're kidding? We've been saying this for 20 years. Don Wildman started saying it in 1977. The time is here. Mm. It is time to get serious with God and get serious about being the church. All right, we're going to take a five-minute break for news. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio Network. Please come back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.